Hey guys, welcome back. Welcome in. Thanks for coming back one more time. Thanks for hitting the download button and thanks for sharing. We love it when you tell a friend. I'm Pastor Dave, sitting with me, Randall, the armor bearer. We are
They That Believe.
This is where church culture meets pop culture. We talk entertainment news, world news, current events, geek news, all filtered through a lens of lifestyle Christianity. So here we are. Oh, it's our first show of the new year.
2017 has dropped.
I think things at my house have started to normalize and adjust for the new year. It seems I'm like we've kind of the holiday spirit is clean.
The magic
free
of
from my house
is gone.
My house is clean. Yeah, the Christmas tree is down. It just seems like okay. We're back to regular business.
I'm going to leave my Christmas tree up this year.
Yeah, and some folks still are. How long? What's okay?
Well, because see, I got that little palm tree, the little Christmas palm tree, and it's like, I like it now. I dig it, so I might just leave it.
I have done that back when I was a single man, you know, not having a woman around to decorate or anything. Yeah. I would leave up lights and, you know, stringed lights in the house and stuff like that just for effect.
Ambiance.
Did you do anything for... to observe New Year's?
Man, I didn't. I had the girls over. They stayed up till like 2 o'clock in the morning, and each of them had invited a friend over, so there were six girls running around the house till 2 o'clock in the morning.
You had a New Year's slumber party.
Yeah, and I was done. I was done at midnight. I was like, okay,
yeah. Well, I certainly am not a partier anymore, and not a drinker. January always brings anniversary for me, so I'm getting ready to celebrate 6 years free from the burden of alcohol. So I don't, and I'm not wired that way anymore now as I approach middle age. I'd rather stay home and stay in anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. Well, speaking of domesticity and the wife, I had an interesting exchange the other day.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Was it a note with...
No.
Well...
No, maybe you have some insight into this. You can explain this to me. I had bought a couple of weeks ago. I had bought a bottle of pineapple juice.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this mixer, this Nutri Ninja.
Mm-hmm.
We like the Ninja products. We have the Ninja Coffee Bar coffee maker, which I love. It's great. And decided, thinking I was going to be more healthy. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get one of these. I don't know what you call it. Does it count as a fruit food processor?
I guess.
Or it's like not really a juicer.
It's not like a blender.
It's closer to a blender where you just throw it all in and vegetables and whatever, and you blend it all up and make swamp drinks.
I did that for a while, and I was like, you know, you figure I would be losing weight or feeling better, and then I got to thinking, you know, I was putting ice cream in it. Ice cream, strawberries, and bananas. And
yeah, it doesn't work that way. Well, I mean, it works that way if you want a tasty delight.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I bought this pineapple juice to kind of mix down into my, if I make like fruit drinks or whatever. And I'm not normally even a big juice drinker. I don't like juice. I don't really like orange juice, which is horrible for you. It's straight up poison.
Yeah.
People always kind of cringe at that. But, I mean, it's just basically sugar.
Yeah, and it gives me heartburn so bad.
Yeah,
I mean, acid horrible. Stuff. Yeah,
but I mean, if you look, the sugar in a glass of orange juice is about the same in a glass of soda.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lived our lives thinking that, you know, orange juice was healthy for us. Now oranges are, but you know, we were as primitive man, we were never designed to drink the juice of 1,000 oranges
in one sitting. You know?
Right? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The sugar spike is heavy. Occasionally, I will indulge. I will say this now: I am obsessed with the fruit punch Snapple.
Hmm.
And it's hard to find that particular flavor brand. I keep buying. They get them at our local Dollar General store. Can't find them at Walmart. They're really not easy to order online. They're real expensive.
You know what I got into lately is those Fuse drinks, and they're super cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, I mean, I'm sure they're garbage as far as, but I mean, they're really, I really like them.
A splash of juice and a whole bunch of additives and stuff. And even the, you know, I'm not saying like I'm being consistent or I'm taking some high position on this, because even the fruit punch Snapple is full of sugar and all that. Anyway, so I get a bottle of pineapple juice and had it in the fridge, and it had maybe a third of it. You know, I'm not drinking it very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I get up the other morning. I wake up, mouth dry, and I wanted something refreshing and tasty. And you know how it is when you laying in the bed and you're thinking about something,
right.
And you're like, oh yeah, that's good, and you
I've got pineapple juice.
You get excited for a moment. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, I want to get up and go get it. And that just makes the anticipation, you know, even worse. So I get up and I stumble to the fridge, excited about having a splash of pineapple juice. I go in there, my pineapple juice, I can't find it.
Oh.
And I'm digging around the fridge. And so I figure, well, my pineapple juice is gone. So I immediately start doing the math on this. And I figure, yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm going to investigate mm-hmm. a little bit. But I figure Gretchen has poured out or has thrown away my pineapple juice.
Yes.
Now, for what reason? I cannot think. Mm-hmm. Why would you do this? If, you know, bad food that's been in there a while, I get.
Yeah.
This bottle of pineapple juice been in there a week, mm-hmm. maybe two, maybe. So later on when I have the opportunity, I go, hey, I got up to go get my tasty pineapple juice and it wasn't in there. Did you throw out my pineapple juice? She says, yeah, it didn't look good. It was all cloudy. And it was. And I said, it gets like that when it sits in the bottle.
It
right?
blinked. It's, it blinked, you know, on her.
The juice is concentrated, and the heavy part or the syrupy part, the juicy part, the concentrate, mm-hmm. when it sits in the bottle, you know, will separate from the right. water. So, mm-hmm. you know, what looks at the bottom is a little clearer than what's at the top. So I'm explaining this to her. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. Well, I didn't know. And I was like, well, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a,
yeah,
you know, it's not a federal crime. But I said, I sure did want some tasty pineapple juice when I got up this morning. So here's what she said. She goes, well, there's tomato juice in there.
Same thing.
Tomato juice.
You know, I go through phases in life where I like tomato juice, and then I don't.
Well, it wasn't even tomato juice. It was vegetable juice, like V8, like yeah. store brand V8. Mm-hmm. But in what world, in what scenario, is vegetable juice a comparable substitute mm-hmm. for pineapple juice?
Well, you know, tomatoes are a fruit. You know,
are you that guy?
Yeah.
Everybody hates you for that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, well, that's actually those nuts are actually not nuts. They're legumes or they're seeds. Tomato is actually, did you know it's actually a fruit? Yes. We know it every time some stupid person brings it up and has to remind everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have any tomato juice, didn't have pineapple juice. Okay, we were talking last week about Carrie Fisher, and when we record in advance, of course, things happen and we don't know about, and we were talking about Debbie Reynolds being ill, and
yeah.
she might have even passed at the moment we were talking about her, but yeah. I didn't see it until...
Yeah, it was like when I got home that night, I noticed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But we have a death certificate now on Carrie Fisher, mm-hmm. and they have confirmed her cause of death. The Los Angeles County Department of Public Health issued death certificate in the name of Carrie Frances Fisher under cause of death. It says, and to no one's surprise, cardiac arrest and with a designation of deferred.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means the deferred means that they're going to investigate more because they look for an underlying cause.
Yeah.
You know, did she have heart disease or... Will they attribute it maybe to her substance abuse,
right.
Something to that effect? Did she have some other kind of condition?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I'm not saying this, God forbid, but, you know, was she under the influence of something mm-hmm. at the time or something to that effect? And that's the unfortunate part. These toxicology tests take several weeks. So it could be a while, but I don't know. I don't know how much of that we really need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was too young for sure at 60, yeah. but it also wasn't like she was 25 or 30 either.
What happened to George Michael? Did they ever figure out what happened to him? I haven't heard.
I haven't really followed that, so yeah. there's probably some information on the internet.
Yeah.
With it being sudden like that, the first place I go to in my mind is what we would call a blowout,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really out of school on this, so... I'm probably gonna make somebody mad that knows more than I knows about this, but like on the different sides of the heart, mm-hmm. there are when those arteries or whatever you want to call them when they blow. I think it's right side versus left side.
Mm-hmm.
The left side, I think, is what they call the widow maker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when that goes, There's not much you can do. That's your sudden. Gretchen's. This happened with Gretchen's dad, and well, really with mine. You have just a moment to recognize that you don't feel well, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Because when it goes, the blood pressure drops mm-hmm. immediately, and it's like immediate unconsciousness, and that's when people just fall out and die. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The other case is like if it's on the other side of the heart. Is where you get the sustained heart attack. We rush people to the hospital and they're recovering from it and things like that. So that's generally what I think of when I hear something like that. And I imagine that's what we're going to notice with him. Mm-hmm. And what's really disturbed me in the last few years is I've known more and more people that this has happened to and has happened younger.
Mm-hmm.
I know a person I was acquainted with that had one several years ago. He was 40. You know, you're talking about scary.
Well, and I had one of my friends that I actually trained to be a store manager. He had one a couple months ago, and I didn't realize it until just a few weeks ago. But yeah, it was the same deal. He was talking to his wife and just fell over, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy I know was sitting at home. He stood up and he told his wife he didn't feel well, and he started to walk outside. And as soon as he walked outside, he just fell down. It's pretty scary. So, yeah. Carrie Fisher now had her heart attack. We talked about that on that flight from London to Los Angeles. That was back on the 23rd. She died on the 27th. I had incorrectly said the 28th, I think, previously. She died the 27th at UCLA Medical Center. Her mother, Debbie Reynolds, died the following day.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so she had probably was dead when we were talking about her.
Yeah.
And had her own medical emergency while making memorial plans. The death certificate lists writer as the occupation in which Fisher spent most of her life. And I think that's appropriate. We talked about last time we were here about how much writing that was probably the bulk of her career.
Right.
Was the writing. Also said Fisher in the entertainment business for 46 years. All this is on a death certificate?
Okay. I'm going to do the like expanded version for a movie star.
You get a little bit of bio on it, I guess. Her highest level of education was 10th grade. How about that?
You know, you hear that a lot. And I heard one time that Peter Jenkins didn't graduate from high school.
Right.
He went straight into...
Peter Jennings,
yeah. That a lot of those, the higher level radio and TV people were... You know, they just jumped right into a career.
When I was at, this many years ago, I was at Rock Block Guitars in Nashville, and they have pictures on the wall. A lot of places where you get celebrity clientele, mm-hmm. you know, will put, it's a trope, you know, you put their pictures on the wall there, and sometimes they sign them and stuff. And there was a picture of John Lee Hooker, and it looked like a three-year-old had taken a crayon to it and scribbled on it.
Right.
I mean, it was just lines and scratched up all over. And my friend who worked there, I said something to him about it. And I said, what's up with John Lee's picture? And he looked at it and he kind of chuckled. He said, you know, John Lee never got out of the third grade. And he had, in effect, had signed it. So, for what it's worth.
Well, didn't I see that the other day that somebody was trying to sell a Shoeless Joe Jackson autograph? And the guy's like, there's no way that's a legit autograph. And the guy's like, oh, no, it says it right here. You know, and the guy's like, no, Shoeless Joe never learned how to read or write.
Yeah.
So he couldn't sign his name.
You would, even somebody that is illiterate, wouldn't they know how, they would make it, what am I trying to say? They would find some way or develop some way to make their mark, right?
Well, yeah, apparently Shoeless Joe just put it in an X. That was his mark, was just an X. He never actually signed his name.
Yeah, that was a thing once. Mm-hmm. How does that work? Like, who decided that an X was acceptable?
I don't know.
Why was that okay? It doesn't look like this was signed. No, there's an X. Oh, well, there's the X. Well, since there's an X, you didn't say there was an X. Fisher, star of the Star Wars saga, and Debbie Reynolds, who was in Singing in the Rain, famously, mm-hmm. were mourned in joint memorials at their neighboring homes. They live beside each other.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? They had a joint funeral at Hollywood Hills Cemetery the next day. And relatives say they're now...
Where my grandparents are buried.
At
Hollywood Hills.
Oh, Hollywood Hills Cemetery?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in the Los Angeles area?
Yeah, it's probably about the only cemetery you got out in that area. Your land is so sparse.
Yeah. Is that mom's parents?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So they'll have a big public memorial. That'll mm-hmm. be, I'm sure, a who's who. And you think George Lucas will probably
come out?
you would expect.
Yeah, you'd think that all the people.
Oh, man, the paparazzi bulbs will be burning hot that day, won't they?
Yeah.
You imagine? Because you have to expect, you have to think, you're going to get all your Star Wars royalty.
Mark Hamill will surely be there.
Harrison Ford. You have to. You have to think.
And then the people that worked on the new movie, they'll probably have to show up too because they worked with their...
J.J. Abrams. Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's going to be... that's Christmas for the paparazzi and to have all those people. And then...
Yeah.
And you hate to say it, it's kind of morbid, but that's the way their business works. They kind of like the funerals and to catch people in mourning and
people that try to catch pictures of Marilyn Monroe when she was dead and Elvis when they were dead, you know?
Yeah. Much easier now, though.
Yeah.
Seems we get too much of that. Too much video. Too much. I remember back when I was just getting started, when I was in the police academy, you know, you'd be in a class or you'd find an instructor or a supervisor, somebody that they would have video cassette tapes that, you know, maybe had on duty shootings and things like that. And now they're on the internet like every day. It's crazy how much.
Going to traffic school and seeing that Blood on the Asphalt movie that was actually people that had gotten in accidents, that kind of thing.
Modern convenience or speeding death trap.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, and you know, the standardized classes and the ones I used to teach one for the National Safety Council, avoid those. They don't use them anymore. And the reason is a little surprising. The research found that they were not effective. They didn't work. You know, the idea being we show you this gory video of modern convenience or speeding death trap, death on blood on the highway, and it would scare you, you know, and you would improve your driving. But really, they found that it had no effect at all, really, or little to no effect. So anyway, a lot of places have kind of abandoned that, especially now.
They still do that here, though, because I did a class a couple of years ago, and they still had the same. It was actual video cassette. Yeah.
Well, you didn't take mine. I taught a good class.
Did you?
Well, I was certified, standardized by the National Safety Council. Okay, something else I ran across this week. This is kind of random, but it really it ruffled my feathers. You know what grinds my gears? You know who Natalie Portman is, right?
Yes.
She's Star Wars royalty to a degree, isn't she?
Yeah, she's the prequel royalty.
Yeah, yeah. Literally and figuratively. Well, Natalie Portman is speaking out.
Oh, here we go.
On an issue that's very dear to you and I. We've discussed it in here before. The Jackie star, I don't know what that is. Is it a movie or TV show?
Huh.
She revealed to Marie Claire UK that, here's her complaint, Ashton Kutcher, you know him, right? He was paid three times as much as me on No Strings Attached. Now, if you don't know what that is, I didn't know what it is. Yeah. It's a romantic comedy they did in 2011. They did together.
Okay. I think that was the same. Yeah.
So they were in a movie together. She says, Ashton Kutcher was paid three times as much as me. And she says, I knew, and I went along with it.
I was complicit.
It's like the Holocaust. Yeah, right? I knew, and I did nothing.
I took my $3 million and went home and cried into my pillow.
She says his was three times higher than mine, his salary. So there's this thing with quotes in Hollywood. His quote, I guess his financial quote. So they said he should get three times more. I wasn't as angry, she says, as I should have been. I mean, we get paid a lot, so it's hard to complain, but not impossible, apparently. It's hard to complain, but the disparity is crazy. Is it crazy, she says?
Yeah.
And while successful actors do make a more than comfortable living, Portman pointed out the disparity is worse than the national pay gap. We've discussed that in here. I don't know. I need to go down a whole. I don't want to retread it familiar ground too much, but the pay gap, folks, is an absolute myth. Compared to men in most, and she makes the same math mistake. Compared to men in most professions, women make 80 cents to the dollar. Now we're up to 80 cents. You notice how it keeps going up?
Yeah.
In Hollywood, we're making 30 cents to the dollar.
Do these people realize how out of touch they actually are with the average person that goes and sees their movie?
Again, this is somebody that has bought that pay gap myth and is looking to apply it. When it, let's assume hypothetically, even if it existed mm-hmm. in the rest of the blue collar working world or outside of Hollywood and mm-hmm. $1 million movie contracts, I don't see that it's applicable to her situation.
No.
And I'll explain why in a moment. Portman, age 35, is far from the first actress to speak out about the Hollywood pay gap. Jennifer Lawrence has discussed equal pay often, and Rogue One, Star Wars Story star Felicity Jones did recently as well. In addition, Shameless star Emily Rossum successfully renegotiated her contract with Showtime last month. She will be paid as much or more than the other show's lead, William Macy, a move supported by both Macy and the network. Now, see, what happened there with Rossum mm-hmm. explains why this is a bunch of bunk.
Yeah, because they go in and they have
an agent.
Yeah, that takes care of all
negotiate
that for them.
With. Yeah. This is all a negotiation. This is what the market will bear. Mm-hmm. These are not people making minimum wage.
Right.
If we're making a movie, hey, I want to get Ashton Kutcher and who are we talking about? Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make this movie, and I would love to cast them. Let's see what we can if we can get them.
Mm-hmm.
And people call, and you start to negotiate. Ashton wants, $5.5 million. Mm-hmm. Well, tell him we'll give him $2 million.
Yeah.
Well, then we settle on $3 million, mm-hmm. right? Well, then what are we willing to pay?
Yeah.
If he's going to be stuck at $5.5 million and we can't do it, mm-hmm. we're not going to hire Ashton Kutcher.
Right.
It's not like they're out there giving away free money. Mm-hmm. Well, he is a man. I don't know. And we need a man for
we
the
do,
role.
We do need it.
We do need a man.
Two women wouldn't work. So
that's a different movie. and then you call and that you start negotiate with Natalie Portman. Mm-hmm. If I can get her for $1 million,
yeah,
I'm going to get her for $1 million. It's not a slight against her. It's not a slight against women. I have a budget. I'm trying to save money. Natalie Portman's problem is not the pay gap. Natalie Portman's problem is she needs a new agent.
Have you ever?
She needs to go get Emily Rossum's agent, who renegotiated her contract.
Have you ever had somebody come out and give you a price on something, and you're expecting say you're expecting $5,000, to have to pay $5,000 or something? The guy goes, "Oh, I think I can do it for." Oh, if you can handle it, I'll do it for $1,000. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can see that happening in Hollywood.
I've been on the other end of that. And then, because you're like, wow, he answered so fast. I could have negotiated more. But these, you're talking about $1 million movie contracts that are negotiated mm-hmm. by agents. This has nothing to do with a sets. This is why this does not apply
mm-hmm.
because she operates or with this thinking as if there's some sort of set salaries that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
An actor, a brand is a person is a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
And how much, are you willing to pay? And so just out of curiosity, I went and looked up at least what the internet says these people are worth.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton Kutcher is estimated to be worth somewhere between $140 and $150 million,
mm-hmm.
which I would have thought more, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Mm-hmm. She is estimated around $40 million. So, literally, with their net worths, you mm-hmm. see a 3-to-1 difference.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem with the pay gap, and I'll use that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
If I take his net worth and I compare it to her net worth, mm-hmm. what they've earned, can I glean from that there is a gap of in pay and salary and wages in Hollywood?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense to do that?
No.
Well, that's what we do on a national level with this pay gap myth.
Mm-hmm.
We look at earnings. We look at total earnings, net earnings.
Mm-hmm.
That men earn more, and they do. Men do earn more than women. But we take that and we make a two-stage calculation and mm-hmm. then assume or draw the conclusion mistakenly that there's a gap in the rate of pay.
I'd almost imagine that Ashton Kutcher made more money on the 70s show.
No, actually, the bulk of his money is in business.
Really?
He is a big-time venture capitalist.
Hmm.
He was on... he was on the front end of Twitter.
Yeah, I know he was really big in Twitter.
Yeah. That's the bulk of his money mm-hmm. has been from smart business investments.
Yeah.
That guy's got money tied up in a whole bunch of stuff and has done very well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she needs to invest her money.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. That goes along with, you see all these movie stars that are broke. Does that mean they haven't made money over the past 20 years? No, it just means they can't handle their money very well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can be a broke millionaire. I mean, mm-hmm. it can happen.
Yeah.
But for somebody that's worth $45 million to complain at all. And she kind of, she seems to get that. She's, I mean, we get paid a lot, so it's hard to complain, but the disparity is crazy. There is no disparity. You're worth what you're worth, right? You know, I don't know. You could compare it to some other B-list or C-list actresses. You know, if we got another actress in there, you know, we could get cheaper. And sometimes you have to do that. You know, that may not be your first choice, but you may have to settle on somebody.
Well, I think I've got a cousin that's really, he's got his Screen Actors Guild card, and he plays extras and stuff in movies. And I think there's like a scale they pay for.
Yeah, for any kind of work, you do have to get a base scale. They do have essentially a minimum wage, and I think it's really minimum. There's not much to it.
But, I mean, it's the same. There's no difference between what a man and a woman would make in that on that scale.
No, but it's just a commodity. I mean, like, okay, Ashton Kutcher, who's a pretty big name. Yeah. I would consider, he's A-list, right? We consider him A-list. Well, what if we were looking at casting him or Tom Cruise? Would you expect to pay more for Tom Cruise?
Yeah.
Of course you would. He's one of the biggest stars in the world.
Yeah.
You know, does that mean there's some sort of disparity there? You just cannot, even assuming that this pay gap nonsense is real, you cannot apply it here.
No.
She just needs a better agent. She needs to go get Emily Rossum's agent, somebody who'll go in, a bulldog who will go get her what she's worth. But, well, I say that, she may have a good agent.
Yeah.
This may be what she's worth.
Right.
Her worth, or what the producers are willing to pay for her, and her name draw, her brand, her talent, her marquee draw, may be a third of what it is for Ashton Kutcher. It may be three times more than what it would be for another actress, though. You know, she's got to be worth more than others.
Right.
And she is not a dumb person.
No, she's graduated from all kinds of
Natalie Portman is famous for doing a lot of academic work. She's been in school a long time. But if I can do the math on this, why can't she do the math on that? Or is this something where maybe her agent's feeding her? Well, you know what it is. It's the narcissism of the left. It's the sanctimonious Hollywood stuff. Yeah,
that she feels like she deserves it.
We've believed that the pay gap thing is a thing.
She feels slighted.
It's a way to buy into that issue and to push that issue. And it made me so mad reading. You just want to reach through the screen and with a pencil and paper and, well, look, let me draw this out for you. Look. Get a better agent, right?
Yeah.
What famously from Jerry Maguire, what's the line?
Show me the money.
Show me the money. That's what you tell your agent. Not what go to Marie Claire and complain about your...
I mean, what could you do with $45 million or $48 million as you couldn't do with $40 million? I mean, what is she really...
Yeah, I said 40. I think it was 45. I'm going to give her that extra $5 million. You know what's interesting? You want to go down an internet rabbit hole, start Googling and looking up like net worths of different celebrities. I was really surprised to see some that were worth a lot more than I would have ever thought. And again, with Ashton Kutcher, knowing how much he's got tied up in like his venture capital, I sort of expected, I mean, don't get me wrong, 140, 150 mil is nothing to sneeze at, but I sort of expected more, knowing how many places he had his money tied up.
And, you know, some of it might be tied up and stuff, and he might have $300 million out there.
But that's your worth. That still counts as your worth, though. Like Tom Cruise, and I threw that out earlier, his was like $500 million, which, again, I sort of expected to be more. We talked in here last time we were here about all the shows I was watching on HBO. I told you I was watching Curb Your Enthusiasm. Well, you know, Larry David, the guy that's in that show, is the co-creator of Seinfeld. And so I'm watching the show, and I'm thinking, this guy's got... He doesn't just have money. He got Seinfeld money.
Right.
So I had to. I was like, let me see how much Larry David's worth. $800 million.
Oh, I'm sure. You know, like Seinfeld himself, he's got to be
worth $800 million. Both of them were.
And he hasn't done anything since Seinfeld. I mean, he's like sitting at home.
Well, that's, you get mailbox checks on that. You know, every time Seinfeld's on, they get a check.
Right.
So you got, Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, who, if you've never watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, if you don't really know much about that, and I wouldn't because I never liked Seinfeld, which is interesting because I like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I don't like Seinfeld. You wouldn't understand or believe that this guy is worth that much, but he's got Seinfeld money.
Yeah.
Larry David is worth $300 million more than Tom Cruise. get your mind around that. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Isn't that crazy?
Think if Larry David looked like Tom Cruise, how much money he'd be worth. And go.
I don't know, though. That would sort of take away from his shtick, wouldn't it, though?
Yeah.
So, yeah, she just needs a better agent. Mm-hmm. Okay, speaking of casting, I thought you'd find this interesting. In some downtime was surfing the web and killing time on the internet, and I ran across some information about casting on The Walking Dead.
Who?
A bunch of actors who auditioned, but ultimately didn't get the part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I thought you might be entertained by knowing who had tried out, who could have potentially been featured on The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I've got some actors who auditioned to be Rick and some who auditioned to be Negan. Which would you like to hear first?
Oh, let's go with Rick first.
Let's go with Rick first. Okay. Actors who auditioned for the part of Rick, but ultimately did not get the part. First, Natalie Portman. No, I'm just
kidding. You fire your agent. Natalie, fire your agent.
Thomas Jane.
Oh.
You know him?
Yeah.
Thomas Jane, star of
Famous
The Mist.
Punisher.
The Punisher, Deep Blue Sea, Dreamcatcher. Mm-hmm. He read for the role of Rick Grimes, but ultimately lost. And he's got something, his most recent movie, I think, Before I Wake. I don't know any of these new movies.
Oh, yeah. Probably some girl movie.
What do you think about Thomas Jane? Can you see him?
I can see him do the action parts, but he just doesn't. I guess you were so used to Rick being Rick that it would be hard to get.
I guess that's true, too. It's hard now to get perspective, isn't
it?
You almost can't see anybody else.
Mm-hmm. And he's actually pretty close to the comic book.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean, Rick, as he's drawn, you know, if you're just looking at him, you know, is a pretty nondescript Caucasian male. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anybody that's fairly...
He's any man's hero.
Anybody that's fairly lean or, you know, athletic looking and good looking, I mean, you could pretty much put in the role. Stuart Townsend, you remember him?
I don't know him.
He was, he played Lestat in, the vampire Lestat in that Queen of the Damned. Remember that one with the movie with Aaliyah?
I remember it, but I don't remember.
2015 Salem. If you see a picture, you'd know.
Yeah, probably.
He also auditioned for Rick, but lost. He's a little too, I don't know how to put this. I don't want to insult the guy. I like him. He's fine. He played Vampire Lestat.
Yeah, so probably really pretty.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little too that for, you know, Rick needs to be a little, he doesn't, you know, need to look like a hobo, but he got to be a little grizzled. That's right. What I'm looking for. Stuart Townsend is not grizzled, or I can't see him playing grizzled. Jamie Bamber. Now, this was one I did not know, but some will. He apparently was on Battlestar Galactica for a long time. So if you're a Battlestar Galactica guy, you would know who he is.
The new one? The new Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah, right, yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Jamie Bamber. I saw him, you know, I didn't know who he was. Hmm. Mark Pellegrino. Now, that's one of those guys that, like, you don't know the name, but you know the face.
Yeah, he's
like,
probably...
He's one of those that's in everything.
Yeah.
So if you wonder who that is, just a quick Google on your phone, Mark Pellegrino, and you'll go, that guy.
Oh, him.
Yeah. But I don't know enough about, like, his acting chops and stuff. He could have, you know, looking at him, he could have done
that. That doesn't take a whole lot of acting to do the Rick Grimes character.
What?
I mean, honestly, you think it...
Yeah. You got so much range and arc.
You think there's depth?
It's intense. Yeah. I mean, look at what you have to pull up. And
yeah, I would not say that was a deep...
I would... No. I think you're way off on that one. Mm. I would be worried about my own... psyche trying to go to that place, you know what I'm saying, all the time.
I don't know. It didn't seem like it would be that. It doesn't seem like it's that complex a character.
This Mark Pellegrino guy, he's been on Quantico, that show. I don't watch it, but
I watch Quantico, so I probably
And another one, Ethan Embry. Ethan auditioned for Rick as well, didn't quite fit, although He was cast as a secondary character in season 6. I have another list, too, and maybe I'll segue into that. People who auditioned for one role and didn't get it, but were ultimately cast in other roles on the show. So Ethan Embry, although he didn't get cast as Rick, appeared in season 6. He was Carter, and you may not remember him, but he wasn't on there very long. He was one of the people at Alexandria. He actually plotted to kill Rick, but then was bitten. And then Rick killed him because he was bitten. So Ethan Embry did get a little, he got a little Walking Dead money. Well, let me segue into that before we talk about Negan actors. These were some who were auditioned for one role but were cast in others. Lori Holden, she is known for being Andrea. Lori Holden played Andrea. May she rest in peace. But most don't know that she originally was trying out for the role of Lori, Rick's wife. And I think she did better in the long run. I mean, I think that Andrea was a better part, and she got a longer run. I never liked Lori.
I don't think anybody. I think she was meant to not be liked.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
Was she, that it was intentional or she was made that way? I never cared for her. Sonequa Martin-Green, who is Sasha. Originally auditioned for Michonne, but wasn't what the producers were looking for. Again, I don't think she's quite athletic enough.
Michonne is a different kind of character. I mean, you know that?
That's what I just think of, you know, physicality. You know, you don't need somebody that looks like a professional wrestler, but...
Yeah, and she's got that stare and the emptiness sometimes.
And intensity, Ted Huckabee, that was somebody I didn't know. Ted auditioned for the role of Merle Dixon, who was Daryl's brother. But no one could compare to Michael Rooker. You pretty much, you know you're not getting that one. Ted did, however, land the
role.
What's
your favorite Michael Rooker movie?
My favorite? Man, there's so many. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer comes to mind, but I don't know that I would call that my favorite.
I'm thinking Days of Thunder.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, it's my favorite movie.
I like him in Slither. We've talked about that movie. That guy's had a storied career, man. He's been. I would be interested to see his filmography. I wonder how many things he's been in.
Let's look him up on IMDb. I'm sure he's been in millions of things.
JFK, I liked him in that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of smoke there, boss, but there's some fire. Yeah, he was perfect in that. Ted Huckabee did not get the role of Merle. However, he did land the role of Bruce from Alexandria much later on. Chad L. Coleman, remember him? He was Tyrese.
Yes.
Chad Coleman, and he also had the crazy fit on the subway. Anyway, poor guy. He did get the role of Tyrese, but he originally tried out for Morgan.
I don't think he could do better than the Morgan.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy carries a pensiveness about him or something.
Because he was in Jericho. You remember that movie, that show Jericho? The TV show came out a couple of years ago.
I know of it, but
he was in that, and he was just amazing in that. This is just a very complex character.
But there's your perspective again, too. We're so accustomed to people in those roles now, because each one of these that comes up, you go, "Well, nobody could compare." Yeah. Well, nobody, because we've never, you know, we don't have any other point of context. And finally, arguably one of the most popular people on the show, Norman Reedus. Would you not think he's probably
Daryl Dixon,
a breakout character? I think I could be out of school on this. I was thinking he may have been supposed to have died earlier on, and he was so popular they've kind of kept him around. But I don't know. I think he is dead in the comics.
Yeah, I think Negan kills him in that.
Oh, okay. Norman Reedus originally auditioned for Merle, who would be his brother Merle, but the creators and producers loved him so much they wanted a bigger role for him. So they wrote the part of Daryl Dixon, and I think that was smart. I like Rooker as Merle. I like Norman Reedus as... anyway, now Negan. Several of these, I'm going to save my favorite for last, because I have one that just... I was like, oh, I wish I... Now, there is one I'm like, I wish I would have seen that.
Have you ever seen, like, the screen test people do, like, when they're screen testing for Star Wars, and they do...
Those don't interest me much. Well, I don't really...
I've seen a couple of them where they had different actors that went for, like, Mark Hamill's character in Star Wars, Luke Skywalker, and it's like, that's just wrong. That's not even... You know what I mean? I mean, the guy's probably great, but it just...
It doesn't feel right.
Right, yeah.
It's not what we know. Mm-hmm. It's like a stranger coming home pretending to be your mom.
Yeah.
You know, who are you, and what have you done with my mother? It just won't ever feel right. So, who auditioned for Negan? First, Matt Dillon. No one plays a better jerk than Matt Dillon. this writer
in real
says.
Life. Yeah,
So it's shocking to find out he didn't get the part of Negan after auditioning. He could have done it, I think. Garrett Dillahunt. This is another one that you don't know the name, but you know the actor. He's a Deadwood alum.
Oh.
He was in have you ever watched Deadwood?
I've watched some of it. I haven't.
He's the guy with the messed up eye that shot Buffalo Bill.
Okay.
Which he does not have a messed up eye in real life, but he's one of those people, once you're aware of him, it's like, you know, you hear a word that you think you've never heard, and then once you hear it, you hear it everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's that kind of actor. Like, once you know who he is, then you see him everywhere.
Yeah.
Garrett admitted on Twitter that he was lobbying for the role of Negan, since he was a big fan of the show, but his efforts weren't enough to get him cast. Next up, another Deadwood alum, Timothy Oliphant. Yep. I like him. I don't know that I would have liked him for Negan.
No.
But I do. I like him on Deadwood. Mm-hmm. Also, Justified. That's his. If you don't know who Oliphant is, that's his show. He's pretty much star of that. And, of course, movies. He auditioned for Negan, traveling from L.A. to Atlanta to meet with casting, but he didn't get the part. This one, I think you'll like. Curious to know. John Hamm.
Oh,
Mr. Madman himself.
My favorite. Yes, I love John Hamm.
Everyone's favorite madman, seriously considered for the role of Negan. Sounds like he was a serious contender.
He could have done it.
You think so?
I think so, yeah.
Are he and Jeffrey Dean Morgan, they're not too far apart, it seems.
No.
I don't know that we would have gotten much different between the two of them.
Yeah. I mean, as far as gritty goes, you probably go better off with Jeffrey Dean Morgan than you would. But, I mean, he's just such a good actor.
Well, I was thinking, you know, there's looking at these actors that could have potentially played or portrayed the part, and thinking about the Negan character, which is sort of a balance of intensity and extreme violence mixed in with absurdity and like gallows humor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes back and forth between comical and
basically someone who's mentally unstable.
Yeah. And I think there are guys, you know, like John Hamm, maybe Timothy Oliphant, who could pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Dillon, I don't know. Like, I don't see Matt Dillon being like funny.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Delivering the comic lines. And
no.
Now, here's the last one. And this one, oh man, I would have paid to see this. Rollins.
Oh, yeah, he would have nailed the role.
Henry Rollins.
Yes, he would have nailed that role for sure.
Do people know who Henry Rollins is, or do I need to tell them?
Oh, gosh, go ahead.
And if you're an old punk and rock metal person, then you already know Henry Rollins.
Did you see the movie he just came out with? I forget what it's called, but it was a new movie.
It's in my Netflix queue. It's been in my Netflix queue for over
a
year.
He Never Dies or something.
I've never watched it.
But he is awesome in that movie. He plays Cain, like Cain and Abel.
Is it good? Should I watch it?
Oh, it's awesome.
Been in my queue forever.
Yes, it is an amazing movie. Also, Sons of Anarchy fame. He was in Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah, he did do a few episodes in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, part of that dude's gang.
Mm-hmm.
And he's popped up in a lot of movies. Which was it, Heat, that he was in, or am I thinking of a different one? Anyway, he gets some character parts from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you don't know, Henry Rollins was, he started as a vocalist or a singer, I don't know if you call it singing, in the Washington, D.C. area.
Like screaming.
He was a kid. He joined Black Flag, the punk group. And he's done writing, and he does one-man stage shows. I don't know if you'd really call it stand-up. I guess it is. They're funny. Mm-hmm. But he kind of...
More like commentary.
Just riffs on life. Yeah. Super, super, super interesting. Interesting guy, and has gotten even more interesting in his old age.
Yeah.
I think, you know,
he's
morphed into something a little different, but it's always just interesting.
And he always like says exactly what he feels. He's like, there's no sugarcoat to him at all.
He's just like one of those people like you dream of having over for dinner or spending an evening with, and just listening to and hearing stories.
Yeah,
I had a it was like on two or three cassettes. I guess audiobook or him reading, what was it? Get in the Van was the name of it. Get in the Van. It was a story about him joining Black Flag and his days on the road with him. And I just listened to that over and over, all those stories he would tell. And Rollins' band. which was his group that he founded back in the 90s. Henry told Forbes that he was, and here's the thing, he got close. Mm-hmm. He got real close. He was almost cast as Negan, thought he was a shoo-in because Charlie Adler, one of the creators of The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. here's a little bit of trivia, based Negan off of him. How about that? Yeah. And it almost seemed guaranteed. Like, he almost walked, mm-hmm. just walked right into the part. But he lost out to Jeffrey Dean Morgan because of pay gap.
I don't think he would, like, I don't think he would lobby for a job. I think he'd go in there and say, okay, if you guys want me, I'll do it. If not.
He would have wanted this one, yeah. Especially when somebody says, you know, I based that off of you. But then you recognize real quick somebody like JDM, who's a better draw, bigger actor. Mm-hmm. Like, well, no. We love you, Henry, but if we can get him... Yeah. We'll get him. So anyway, any thoughts on that, or would you have any alternate casting you would have done? Who would you, if you had your casting choices?
Rollins would be cool to watch to see how he would do it. Henry Dean Morgan's good. I mean, I don't have any. I liked him in Supernatural the first couple seasons. He was on that.
Yeah, he's speaking of things in my queue that I've never gotten to watch ever since you mentioned it. I put Supernatural in my Netflix queue. Never watched it.
No. It's one of those, if you watch it all, I mean, like, if you watch it all one after the other, it'll take you like a month. Because there's like 10 seasons, and it's 22 episodes a season. So it takes you forever, but it's a really good show.
I'll say I'll get to it. So.
The only one I don't like out of all of them was the one that the season cliffhanger they just did. It was horrible. The very last show they did was just the worst one I've ever seen.
But it's still going, though.
Yeah.
They'll go for a while, right? Mm-hmm. That's been on a long time.
I think it's on 11 seasons
now. Wow. Somebody's watching it. Mm-hmm. Hey. Did you try out Emerald City?
I haven't.
We were watching that here at the house. It's a couple episodes in now.
I've seen it, advertised.
Yeah, we'll put that on the back burner, and maybe if you get a chance to check it out, we'll talk about it. I'm mm-hmm. curious. I've got some thoughts on it. Curious to know what you think. What's my classic line? I didn't dislike it.
I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. I didn't
dislike it, but there's some weird choices, but the premise is weird. So anyway.
I've been watching, and I don't even know why this is going to sound crazy, but I've been watching Teen Wolf.
Okay.
MTV's Teen Wolf.
Okay.
And the reason I'm watching it is my mom said it was a really good show.
And that's another one that's like still on.
It's been several seasons. So I'm kind of starting to watch it. Yeah, kind of getting into it. Kind of like the characters. Kind of goes quick. You know, it's a 30-minute show, so.
It's the best show you're not watching. All right. Well, let's finish today with a quick Miss Manners.
Oop.
I don't know why this one jumped out at me. It seemed like a question for Retail Randall. Dear Miss Manners, the situation I'm trying to work through involves a business/personal relationship with a salesperson. So they've got a salesperson that they do business with that they're also friends with.
Ooh.
Right? Yeah, okay. All right. Already.
Yeah.
The salesperson who apparently has some serious health issues. While I know the person and I'm sympathetic, I have to work for a living and have precious little time to devote to accomplish my personal business. Now, here's what this looks like. Every time I attempt to discuss business and request an appointment to view the product, mm-hmm. I have to listen to a rambling monologue of how bad the professional is feeling at that moment and all the health issues involved, including what the doctor said. And we all know people like that. And again, I guess people have gathered from listening that I'm not one for like conventions and mm-hmm. like when somebody asks, you know, hey, how are you? Just say fine.
Just go on with it. They don't want to know.
You know? And we all know those people mm-hmm. that, I mean, I have days when I may have a whole lot of things going wrong, but I don't ever burden people with that.
And you know, the days that I really do feel bad, I don't want to like sit there and talk to somebody about how bad I feel. I just want to go on with it.
And I don't mind if you're somebody that I'm close to and you want to tell me, well, honestly, you know, I'm having a hard time lately. I've been not well. Somebody else is not well, but we're working through. You know, we can take a minute or two and get through. But what I'm getting at is, because it's not that I'm like this person, I'm not unsympathetic. And I do want to know. Mm-hmm. But, well, you know, like when you ask those people that you don't want to ask, because you know when you do ask, you're going to be there a while. Because mm-hmm. they'll go on with everything. And I don't want to get that deep in all your health. So anyway, back to the writer says, at one point, I truly cared. Mm-hmm. But now I feel that my time is being monopolized with issues out of my control. While I really don't want to sever the relationship, I must get some things accomplished. And so you've got a dual relationship here. You've got a business and a personal. Mm-hmm. A few days ago, I was told, now here's a reaction. I was told that I'm very selfish and inconsiderate because I refuse to wait more than 15 minutes. The salesperson was still in bed, in parentheses. I live about 100 miles away. I had a number of things to do that day. I have suggested doing business with someone else, and my quote-unquote friend gets so upset when I mention that and tells me how badly she needs the money. Have you ever experienced anything like this or been in that kind?
I try to keep personal and business stuff very separated.
Or maybe not if it was like, not specifically like somebody was sick, but somebody that you had to work with or had a business relationship, a sales relationship with, like didn't have boundaries maybe.
Well, now I did have a salesman one time that had a pretty good, solid relationship with a customer that was buying, you know, and the thing about, like when you're selling stuff to friends, you're not making any money on it. I mean, you're getting that guy the best deal you can get, you know, so you're not really...
The friend price, yeah.
Yeah, you're not making anything on it. So, I mean, it's not... If you lose that business, it's not going to be that big a deal, but their friendship fell apart. So once their friendship fell apart, then the business relationship fell completely apart after that.
Well, she doesn't specify here, but it also sounds like whatever... Despite whatever price she's getting... The product or service apparently is important to her. Mm-hmm. Like it's one of the, she's saying, she keeps repeating about, I need to get things accomplished. I have to get things done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I need this product. I need this service. So you know, regardless of, she's not getting the level of product or service mm-hmm. that she needs either.
Yeah. I mean, this guy, and he took it personally. Like the guy stopped doing business with him. It's like, it's not personal. This guy's a businessman. He's found a better deal. You know, move on with it. You know, try to make it up somewhere else. But really, anytime you get business and personal mixed together, it's horrible.
I mean, now that's in your example mm-hmm. where two people were friends, and because one, but that wasn't because of a personal. Like this is a business relationship that's about to devolve over a personal issue. You're talking about a personal relationship maybe that was devolving over a right. business issue. Mm-hmm. Like I can get a little bit better rate.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't because.
No.
He was unhappy with him. Right? No. Right, yeah.
But yeah, I just sit in on that meeting where they like fell apart with each other.
Oh,
it was horrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's the end? You can't really say, well, you should just never do any kind of transaction with friends or business. No. I mean, and sometimes you start in a mm-hmm. business relationship and you get friendly with people too, mm-hmm. though. So I don't know. How do you do it? How do you navigate that? Or can you? Is it just part of being an adult?
Well, one thing I've done, and I've been pretty successful at it, is if I've got somebody that works somewhere, say I've got a friend that runs a car lot. You know, if I want to buy a car from that car lot, I'll say, hey, do you have a new salesman that maybe needs some bonus money or whatever, you mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. and go with the new guy, try to train him out or whatever.
Right. But, okay. Okay.
It is tough. I mean, anytime you deal with somebody that you know, I mean, because you've got two sides of that coin. You're dealing with somebody that's your friend. You're expecting a good deal. But then that guy's got to, you know, pay his bills and keep a roof over his head and that stuff, too.
Yeah. Well, but see, this thing, you know, and this person won't get out of bed, but then complains and gets mad at you because yeah. says, I need the money. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, then get out of bed and give me what we transact or, yeah. you know, what I need you for, though.
It sounds like they need to just say, hey, I'm too sick to do this anymore. I need to figure out a new way to do it.
That or you know, sometimes you just got to be the bad guy. You got to pull the trigger. and I'm one of those kind of people that I can do that. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with that. I can just go, I'm sorry, this way it is.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. Okay. I'm kind of a, I can move on.
Yeah.
But some people like this person, you know, are worried or you don't want to sever the relationship.
I was going to say, you can always say, you know, that I will continue to do business with you, but just know that, you know, I'm just doing it because we're friends. And, you know, if we weren't friends, I would not be doing business with you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe just define it. Go, I need to either be a better friend to you or I need to be a happier customer. Mm-hmm. So I'm depending on your product, your service, and I appreciate our business relationship, but I really need it to improve. I need you to be available, or I need to get my product on time, whatever the issue is. I need you to make meetings. Now, listen, you're my friend and I care about you. Now, if you're not well enough to do that, then let's shift gears and tell me what I can do to help you personally.
Yeah.
You know, maybe kind of draw that boundary. But then, well, I guess this person's going to come, oh, no, I need the money. You need to be patient with me. And yeah. So anyway, well, here's what Miss Manners said. Allow Miss Manners to simplify the problem by dividing it in two. I guess this is what I just did. Your professional relationship with the salesperson and your personal one. A friend offers both assistance and sympathy to an invalid, while the sick person tempers her complaints based on the closeness of the friendship, the seriousness of the illness, and the likelihood that the friend will remain sympathetic throughout repeated recitation of symptoms. That's another thing, too. I think this person did care and has cared, but is, you know, you can wear people down, especially when it's constant. A salesperson, meaning a person of professional capacity, does the job in the hope that professional courtesy, efficiency, and distance will be rewarded with repeat business. Consulting the salesperson about whether to shop elsewhere is a mistake. So she's kind of saying, just dodge that issue. He or she is too sick to make this decision, so it's up to you.
Yeah.
Right. You're not going to get anywhere having a conversation with, you know, bringing them into that decision. Should I do business somewhere else? You know, that's not going to work. What support you owe outside of any professional relationship, if any, will be based on whether you truly see this person as a friend, which is the way you put it, as a friend in quotes or as a real friend. Yeah. Boundaries. Some people don't have them.
Yes.
And you can wear people down when you go on, you know, if you're one of those. It's not that people don't care, not that they're not sympathetic, but, you know, when they see you coming and don't want to ask you how you are because you, you know you're going to be busy for the next few minutes. That's tiring. And, you know, and I don't want to burden people with my problems either. But especially, I mean, it's like get up, dress up, show up. You know, especially if you're in business, if you open, if you need money. And it sounds like, again, that's the way I would do it. I would just counsel this person and go, how can I help you? How can I help you help me?
Yeah.
Right? Does that sound too Dr. Phil? How can I help you help me? How can I help me help you? I don't know. Anyway, business, personal, tough to navigate, I guess, sometimes. I don't have a lot of those relationships anyway. That I don't think there's anybody I really do business with. Like that. No, I take that back. I take that back, man. I have had somebody in the past year or two who I did business with sporadically. It was kind of as needed. It wasn't like a regular thing. I wasn't like this person. Like I needed products and I needed to meet deadlines. It was sort of like when I had a particular need, I would go to this person when it arose to fill it. Well, and this person who was a good friend. But like for some reason one day, boom, no contact. And haven't had like any contact. It was like just stopped completely. And I'm not mad or anything. You know, it kind of hurt my feelings a little, and I don't know why. But in that time, I have not given that person any more business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not throwing a fit or mad about it, but it's like, I don't know. That person didn't want to. I don't know. That's weird. I have not drawn that connection, but that person didn't want to be friends anymore.
Well, I got one, you know, like I always try to buy local, especially like in our little town, you know. And so there's a store in our town that I've bought a product from for ever since we lived here. You know, I've bought the same product. Now, I'm not saying this is something I buy every day or anything like that, but I go in. He's always got it on the shelf. Kind of a hard product to find.
Yeah.
I could order it online, you know, and get it.
Fruit Punch Snapple.
Yeah. But I mean, I can get it pretty quick. But, you know, even if I have to pay a little bit of extra money, I always go to him and get it. And so I went in there, it's been a couple months ago, and I was like, hey, you know, I need to get this product. And the lady that was there was just like, you know, hey, I don't have it. I can order it for you. And I was like, okay, so when do you think you'd come in? She's like, oh, it could be a month, could be two. And I was like, okay. So I was like, well, I'll get back with you.
I hope it's not your insulin.
Yeah, no. No, I mean, so I just left and went home and ordered it online and got it. You know, for the first time in 10 years, I've bought this product online, you know.
And get a better rate?
Oh, probably. Yeah. Oh, way better. Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. Was it just that employee, though?
No,
I
mean, it's the whole store now.
Oh, okay. It would not have been improved if the person you knew was there. And,
no, it's the whole, because I talked to other people that they've had the same experience there.
Oh, okay. Well, just be careful and be considerate, and especially remember, well, I think whether you're in a personal relationship or a business relationship, your, I don't want to say responsibility, but your role is to also serve the other person, you know, not burden them with your problems, or if you know, do what you can to meet their expectations. I think that's it. We're just so narcissistic. We're just wrapped up in ourselves, and even then we don't understand, like, if you said something about that, they'd probably get mad at you, you know? Well, what do you need it so quick for? We get it when we get it. You know, it's always back into people internalize it and put it back on you and don't take any accountability or responsibility. And the sad part about that is, you know, look, you know from the business model that it's much more valuable and important to keep an existing customer than it is to get new ones. So that's where you make your money. Okay. All right. Well, Happy New Year to everybody. I hope everybody got off to a good start. And the weather has been crazy here. We went from the teens right around the new year to it's like 70 today. In the middle of January.
Out there, yeah.
I don't know what we're doing.
I had the air conditioner on in school today.
I almost thought about turning it on here at the house. I almost did, but I didn't quite make it.
I kicked the back door open last night before I went to sleep.
Do that in January. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? And we'll be back in the teens next week, I guess.
Yeah. What do they say, that a record warm temperatures and tornado warnings can only mean that a severe ice storm's on its way? You live in Tennessee.
Shut up. Shut up. Don't you dare. If that happens, it's on you. I'm now blaming you. You've just taken responsibility.
I'll be in the house watching you patrol by.
Yeah. I got to work in this garbage, man. Okay. All right. Well, we'll come back here in another week or two and talk about some more nonsense. And until then, I appreciate you checking us out. Facebook.com/theythatbelieve. Give us a like, give us a share. And until we talk to you again, I'm Pastor Dave with Randall the Armor Bearer. We are
They That Believe.